And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Wednesday as we help you get over the hump and towards the weekend with plenty to do over the next few hours. Coming up, the latest in the Freddie Freeman saga. Plus, Baker Mayfield speaks out yesterday as the Deshaun Watson hearing continues. And which quarterbacks in the NFL have the most to prove this year? Plus, where will Spencer Rattler fit in to the SEC this year? Arch Manning's impact on college football? And which of those programs will be, quote-unquote, back first? Rob Manfred speaking out about trying to fix Major League Baseball. And speaking of which, how important is it to have the ability to throw a baseball? We'll get to that coming up later on this afternoon. All that and plenty more over the next few hours. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. On Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head over there and click on our show page where you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. We're there till 3 on this Wednesday. Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing great. It's a beautiful Wednesday here in the Low Country. Got some rain yesterday, sun shining now. We got a lot of sporting news to talk about. It's great. We're getting into the July month. Here we go. Yeah. We're close to football season. I'm feeling good. It's a beautiful Wednesday here in the Morrow Midday Show.
Yeah. It'll be July. Well, on Friday, right? July 1st.
Can't believe it's July 1st. We can play that clip over and over again.
That's right. Where does the time go? Oh, my goodness, it's July. July is, and we've done a ranking of the sports month. I think July is probably the worst sports month of the calendar year, right? We got nothing. All you have is baseball.
Right.
And then even in baseball, you have the All-Star break, so there's no baseball for a week in July.
Well, if FIFA had their head on straight, they would have scheduled the World Cup in a place where we could play it in the summer, so we could potentially have the World Cup during this month of July here. So thanks, FIFA. We appreciate you.
Yeah, that would be fun. I'd actually look forward to that. Instead, now it's going to be during football season.
People are going to have
no idea what's going on. That seems backwards. What a silly decision. So anyways, nonetheless, I still look right. People always say it's the downtime. Our jobs get so much harder. Hey, we sit here and talk sports for 3 hours. How hard can it be? Let me start with this. Freddie Freeman, you know, we have spoken a lot of things into existence lately here on the Morrow Midday Show. We played the audio for you Monday for Freddie Freeman and his return to Atlanta. He was very emotional. He played a lot of the clips. We talked about it. And I said at the time, if Freddie was truly upset with his agent, he should have fired him when the deal went down in March. If you were truly upset with how somebody handled your situation or treated you, because remember, people seem to forget this. Lawyers, same idea. They're working for you. Right? I know somebody who had to deal with a situation with a lawyer. I feel bad reaching out. They're working for you. Don't feel bad if you seem like you're bothering them. The lawyer is working for you. The agent works for you. You pay the agent. They're supposed to do what you say. And so if Freeman was truly as upset as he appears with how the offseason went down, I would have fired the agent immediately. Like, man, you screwed this whole thing up for me. And we talked about this Monday on the show. Well, yesterday afternoon after we got off the air, we got the news that Freddie Freeman has now fired his agent. Took a little longer But once he went back to Atlanta this past weekend and those emotions stirred up again and he saw his old friends and the old fans in the stadium and thought, man, I do want to be here. I wish I was still here. And he opened up those wounds, and now the agent, gone. And right now Freddie doesn't have an agent. He really doesn't need an agent. He just signed a six-year contract, and the agent gets you get your percentage up front. So the agent for him is like, all right, whatever. I squeezed all the juice out of that fruit anyways. Right? There's nothing more you're going to get out of Freddie Freeman. I mean, we could talk about sponsorship deals and commercials, but you get it, right? The idea, the agent did his job, got a big contract for Freeman. He already got his 10%. He's good. All right, fire me. That's fine. Right? You don't need an agent for six more years anyways. I wouldn't get anything out of you. And Freddie Freeman now is going, for the time being, without an agent because, again, he really doesn't need one for a few years if he wanted to go without one. But he fired the agent yesterday. And so this is another step towards that idea of Freddie being unhappy with how things went in the offseason, of how he truly did want to be in Atlanta. Now, with all of that said, I still don't have a ton of empathy for Freddie Freeman. The agent may have gone a little rogue. The agent may have misled Freddie. Maybe he didn't tell him exactly how dire things were, or, you know, misinterpreted the conversations with the Braves. But again, number one, the agent is working for Freddie. And also, unless Freeman specifically said, like, I want to stay in Atlanta, period, you know, make sure that I get back to Atlanta, then sure, you could blame the agent. But if you say, like, get the best deal possible, get the longest deal, get that six-year contract, the agent's just doing what he's supposed to. And even if Freddie were to tell his agent in the offseason, hey, I want to make sure I'm back in Atlanta. Well, the Braves did offer a contract for 5 years, and what was it, $135 million? And Freddie turned it down. So I don't have a ton of empathy for him in this whole situation. Because as I've said throughout this whole process, I repeated it again on Monday, I'll repeat it again now. If you really wanted to do something, if you really wanted to be there, you would probably be there. You would find a way to get it done. You ever try to go on a trip? I'm going on a trip, so I hope that I don't speak this into existence. But you ever try to go on a trip and, like, the flight gets canceled? And maybe it's, like, a college graduation you got to get to? Or you're trying to get to a wedding? Or you're just trying to go on vacation? Whatever it may be. And the flight gets canceled, and they can't get you out of the airport anytime soon. And you're looking at all different types of ways that you can still get to your destination. Get a rental car, drive cross-country, go to a different airport, whatever it takes. It's like in Home Alone, right? In the first Home Alone, when the mother's trying to get back home, she's doing whatever it takes. She gets back in the van with a polka band with John Candy to get half the way. She's selling a watch to an old couple in the airport to buy their plane. You'll do whatever it takes to get where you got to go if you truly want to be there. She wanted to get home to her kid. She was going to do whatever it took, right? If you truly want to get to that wedding, college graduation, surprise party, wherever you're going, you think, man, I really got to be there tomorrow. I really got to get to Chicago tomorrow, wherever the destination may be. You'll find a way to get there, even if you drive all night. If you really want to do something, you'll find a way to get it done. If Freddie really wanted to be in Atlanta, he would have gotten it done. They offered him a contract that when you include taxes and everything else, he would have made more money, probably with the Braves, than he would out in L.A. But he turned them down. And what did he sign instead? A six-year contract. And when it came to playing hardball with the Braves, what was the big difference? That sixth year. If he really wanted to be in Atlanta, he could have forego the sixth year. He said, that's not that big of a deal. It's 1 year. It's a few extra $1 million. I'm still going to get $135 million. I'll still be under contract till I'm 37. That's pretty good. If he really wanted to be in Atlanta, he could have just signed the contract. The agent's not going to sign for you. That's on you, Freddie, right? And you turned it down. And you played hardball, and the Braves called your bluff, and now you're upset. Probably with the decision that you made as well, or that you had a part in, along with your agent. And I think Freddie should take some responsibility in all of this as well. You fire the agent, that's the obvious move, but also, you probably should share some of that responsibility in that you had a chance to return. Braves gave you a fair deal. Compared to the deal you ended up signing, it was just as good. Just wasn't quite as long. It was 1 year less. Right, that was that big of a deal, to have that emotional return this past? Was it really worth? That would be my question. Was it really worth the 6 year? Looking at how you responded this past week and in your return to Atlanta? You really think this whole thing was worth trying to push for that sixth year? That was such a big deal when you've made millions of dollars in your career? But Freddie fired the agent yesterday. The other thing, too, is, you know, of course, when you go to Atlanta, the analogy I used was like showing up at a wedding for an ex with your current significant other. And it opens up those wounds again when you see them up there and like, oh, that could have been us. When Freddie shows up in Atlanta, like, oh, this could be me every game. coming here and talking to the same media and coming out and playing at this stadium and going to the home clubhouse instead of having to walk to the visitor's clubhouse for the first time. And because everything relates so well to Seinfeld, there was an episode of Seinfeld that was pretty similar in which Kramer and his friend Mickey went on like a double blind date, and there were two women. I think they were twins. No, they weren't. They just looked similar because they had different. They introduced their parents in the episode. So there's just two women that looked very similar, but they were good friends. And Kramer and his buddy Mickey show up, and they don't really know who to pair with who. They both look very similar. And they're both already seated at the table, and they don't know which side of the table they should sit on. Long story short, by the end of the episode, Mickey is marrying one of the women. And when Kramer shows up to the wedding with the other girl, as they sit down in the pew for the wedding, she gets up crying and says something along the lines of, "Oh, Mickey, I can't handle this," and she goes running out. And then after Mickey gets married and he's walking down the aisle with his now new bride, she leans into Kramer and said, "I wish it was you," as they walk out of the wedding. And in a later episode, it's revealed that they're quickly divorced afterwards. But the idea being, right, Kramer shows up with this one girl at a wedding for two of their friends, and she wishes she was up there. And she goes running out crying, kind of like Freddie Freeman showing up this past weekend in Atlanta, wishing he was still there as a member of the Braves and had to go running out of the media room crying. Pretty similar. Right, it opened up those wounds that, man, I wish I was here. Just like if you showed up at that wedding and saw an ex-girlfriend, boyfriend up there getting married and thinking like, oh, man, right? Reminds you of how you wish you were still up there. And then if the person you're at the wedding with realizes this and they see some sort of look you're having, that's Clayton Kershaw on this whole thing, who issued comments after Sunday saying like, man, I mean, you know, you're with us now. We hope we're not a second fiddle. Just like your date at that wedding saying, like, hey, we're dating now. I hope you don't think like I'm second fiddle to the person up there getting married, right? And that's an issue as well. And that typically leads to the end of a lot of relationships if you can't get past the previous person. And Freeman right now has to try to get past the previous team, the Braves. That's what Clayton Kershaw was upset with. Freddie Freeman had to address all this yesterday. He's firing an agent. That's like ending that relationship. You know what? This isn't going to work. I wish I was still with that person up there getting married. My Freddie ends the relationship because things didn't quite work out with that agent this offseason. And now, for the Dodgers, you have this guy who seems to be unhappy. We can all miss things, long things, wish things were different. That's normal. Right? But if you can't get past something, that becomes a little toxic. If you're so obsessive or wish you were there, or you're so unhappy because of what you don't have. We could all miss something. We all miss things in life. I wish I still had that, or I wish that person was still in my life, or you know, whatever it may be. I wish I didn't leave that job. But when it affects your day-to-day, when it leads you to be as emotional as Freddie seemed to be all weekend, it starts heading towards the area. I'm not saying it's there yet, but where it becomes a little toxic. Like if you're in a relationship and you're still crying over somebody else, that's not a great relationship. And that seemed to be Clayton Kershaw's concern with his new teammate. Here is Buster Olney this morning on ESPN's Get Up, talking about this whole situation. Freddie firing his agent, the emotional return, and then also what it means for the Dodgers. You have this guy in your clubhouse that seemingly wishes he was somewhere else after he just signed a six-year contract, and you're trying to go win a World Series. Here is Buster Olney this morning.
So the emotion that you saw on the field over the weekend, yes, a lot of it for Freddie Freeman was gratitude for the response from Braves fans while he was with the team and then when he returned over the weekend. But in talking with friends of Freeman, they also believe that there was a lot of sadness and there was a lot of anger because his first choice at the beginning of the negotiations with the Braves 16 months ago was to remain with the team. And in the end, he wound up with the Dodgers for a contract when you factor in deferred money, $57 million of the $162 is deferred and state tax, he actually got less money. So he makes the move on Sunday to dismiss his agents. He was listed yesterday as being self-represented. There are still conversations going on between Freddie and XL, which he referenced in his statement yesterday. Maybe they patch it up, but he was very angry, as he told friends with the Braves over the weekend, with how this played out.
Wow. I don't know if you know this part of it, but when you talk about Freddie Freeman and where he is now, how do things stand with him and the Dodgers?
Yeah, and there were definitely Dodger players had their eyebrows raised a little bit by how emotional he was over the weekend. You saw that comment from Clayton Kershaw saying that he hopes the Dodgers aren't second fiddle. Freddie told reporters yesterday he's talked to Clayton about that. And here's the bottom line, Ryan. As this is all playing out, the last eight games, the three games leading up to the series in Atlanta, then the series in Atlanta, the last two games, Freddie's hitting .412. With a .487 on base percentage, slugging percentage over .700. In the end, as one evaluator told me yesterday, it really tells you just what an amazing hitter Freddie is, that he's able to perform while feeling this kind of emotion.
Yeah, I mean, in the good news for the Dodgers is that it's not affecting Freeman's performance on the field. Does it make him such an amazing hitter that he can still go out there and play baseball during all? I don't know, I guess. I think we're all being very dramatic in this whole situation. I mean, the guy still is making, what, $162 million? Like, can you believe it? Freddie went 1-for-3 tonight while dealing with the emotions of no longer being a Brave. It sounds like every other night in the Major League Baseball for a lot of guys. But nonetheless, Freeman issued a statement yesterday after firing his agent and, of course, had to talk to the media about all of this. A couple of things that he said that stood out. He said, there needs to be closure. It's time. I'm a Dodger for the next 6 years, and I'm happy where my focus lies. I'm happy to be a Dodger. Which we played that audio on Friday. He was asked about that. Do you need closure? And he said, no. Closure? Why would I need closure? I'm not trying to close anything. It was great here in Atlanta. Now, yesterday, he circles back and says, actually, it is time for closure. I'm sure going to Atlanta for the first time this past weekend did alter a lot of things for him. He also said he's very happy with the Dodgers. When you're in a relationship for 15 years and it ended, you're going to have feelings. Now I'm in the healing process, moving on process. Is what Freeman said yesterday. He said he spoke to Clayton Kershaw, and they're all good. And also said, everyone's going to perceive how they want to perceive it. I spent 15 years with the Braves. I wasn't going to try to be a macho man about my feelings, about how I had a great time with the Braves. That time is over. I'm a Los Angeles Dodger now. If they want to perceive me, how I feel about an organization I spent half my life with, then that's how they want to perceive me. That's fine. I'm okay with that. But I've had 3 months. I've had time to grieve and do all my research and gather information. It's time to move on and focus on the Dodgers. And that's what I'm going to continue to do. I also don't know if he really moved forward and focused on the Dodgers this past weekend, but nonetheless. The latest tale in all the drama, Freeman firing his agent yesterday. And I'll also say this, you know, for Matt Olson, it's probably not easy either. That's always an awkward situation. You ever take a new job and people are still talking about the guy you're replacing? Like, oh, he was so great. Man, we miss Mark around here. Oh, okay, I feel welcomed. I'm sure Matt Olson feels welcomed in the clubhouse, but, you know, going through this past weekend, that's always a little bit awkward. It's like if you're with the ex-wife, you remarried her, and now you have to go to the wedding. You're invited to the wedding of the first husband. Like, yeah, it's a little weird. You're the new spouse. And credit to Matt Olson for actually playing some of his best baseball this past week. Got the biggest hit of that game Sunday against the Dodgers after Freeman delivered the go-ahead hit in extra innings. And then last night hit a pair of home runs and had that go-ahead home run last night to beat the Phillies on the road. So it doesn't seem to be affecting his play either, Freeman or Olson. They're both professionals. But it's also probably not easy on Matt Olson. Hearing all about this, having Braves fans tweet like, we'll trade Freddie for Matt Olson today, which you shouldn't do. But for Olson, I'm sure it's not easy for him either. And he didn't do anything. Right, but because of all this, Olson gets dragged into it a little bit as well. I understand Freddie's unhappy with how things played out. I think firing the agent is just trying to, you know, pass the buck a little bit. That's somebody that's upset and is taking it out on someone. And I think Freddie, deep down inside, if you got him on a one-on-one, honest conversation, I would hope he would accept responsibility as well. Because the agent's working for you, you make the final call, and you had every chance to go back to Atlanta. You wanted to play hardball. You wanted to push for that sixth year. Now you're in L.A. And let's not act like things are, you know, poor old Freddie, things are so bad. You're on one of the best teams in baseball over the past decade, and they're in first place right now. And you're making a lot of money to play baseball. So I think everything will be okay. Speaking of relationships, let me shift to this. Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. It's always an easy comparison when you look at a player and a team and compare it to a relationship. Baker Mayfield right now is waiting to see what's going to happen with his future. If you're a Panthers fan, maybe you're waiting to see what will happen with Baker. Will he make his way to Carolina? Does it depend on the Deshaun Watson punishment? That heads into day two of the hearing today. I wouldn't be surprised if the NFL tries to do a news dump this weekend around July 4th. I also wouldn't be surprised if this thing drags on a little bit longer. But if the hearing wraps up this week and the NFL announces, maybe they wait till July 4th. People are outside barbecuing. Maybe you do it Friday, late Friday, when people are heading out of town, including in this industry. We're going to be off on July 4th around here. Right, maybe if you're the NFL, that's when you announce it. Friday evening, and then by the time everybody gets back to work on Tuesday, it's like, all right, what's the latest story? You're on to something else. We'll see when we get news from Deshaun. In the meantime, Baker's trying to wait and see what happens with him. He was at like a charity golf tournament yesterday, and here was Baker Mayfield being asked by the media about the situation with Cleveland right now.
I mean, is it a little unfair that you still don't kind of know where you're going or what's going to be happening?
I think I got frustrated with it not happening before, like mini camp and all those things. But that's the stuff that's out of my control. And so, you know, let those things happen and fall into place. And so right now I'm just controlling what I can and enjoying this.
Would there be any chance of reconciliation there?
No, I think for that to happen, there would have to be some reaching out. But we're ready to move on, I think, on both sides.
Baker Mayfield talking yesterday. When he says there would have to be some reaching out, I would imagine he's talking about the Browns coming to reach out to him. The two sides on a little bit of a standoff, which again takes me back to a relationship comparison where maybe you have too much pride or won't swallow your ego. You wait for the other person to come back, crawling back to you. You're not going to be the first to reach out. Right? You ever have that buddy? Relationship ends. They always say, oh, she'll be back. And then you wait around hoping that one day she's going to knock on the door. She's going to text your phone. And you refuse to reach out or swallow your pride or apologize or whatever. They'll come back. Don't worry. She'll realize what she's missing. Baker seems to have a similar thought as well. But as they say, ego is the enemy. And Baker's always been a guy with that chip on the shoulder that has a little bit of a strong ego. And because of it, I doubt we'll ever get any sort of reunion between him and the Browns. Here was Sam Acho talking about that this morning on Get Up, saying there's a 0% chance Baker ever plays again for Cleveland.
Never say never. I'm going to break that rule. I'm going to say never. Baker Mayfield will not be a Cleveland Brown. There's no way that it happens. I get it that he's under contract. All that makes sense. But sometimes there's something that lies below the surface, like that's not written on paper. The Cleveland Browns were seeking a trade earlier in the offseason, and they achieved that trade in getting Deshaun Watson. At that time, Baker Mayfield knew the relationship was done, even though it might have been on the rocks. And so now that Deshaun Watson may or may not be available this season, even if Cleveland wanted Baker to come back, Baker's not coming back. You saw the smirk. They said, will you come back? He said, no, there would have to be some reaching out, i.e. y'all would have to reach out to me. And I still would say no. And so for me, if I'm Baker Mayfield, number one, I'm not coming back to Cleveland. And number two, I'm going to a place like maybe Carolina or Seattle, where I'll have an opportunity to compete for a starting position, a place where the two quarterbacks there are not proven in the NFL.
We'll wait and see if and when Baker winds up somewhere else. But this, too, seems like a toxic relationship where neither side wants to reach out or mend that fence, and Baker's already moved on and said, no, you're going to have to come crawling back to me if I ever consider playing for you again. Could he eventually wind up with the Panthers? Maybe we still have to wait on that Deshaun Watson punishment. But that takes me to this. When we come back, which quarterbacks have the most to prove this NFL season? I think there's some nuance to the conversation, and so we'll rank different guys in different tiers and look at what's on the line for different quarterbacks this year. Baker Mayfield, if given the opportunity, certainly has something to prove this year. Who else is in that company? We'll get to that next. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Son of a preacher man, the only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. Yes, he was. He was. Yes, he was. Being good isn't always easy, no matter how hard I try. When he started sweet talking to me, he come and tell me everything is alright. He kiss and tell me everything's alright. Can I get away again tonight? The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy.
Which quarterbacks have the most to prove this year in the NFL? We'll get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We were talking about Baker Mayfield last segment. If Baker ever gets the opportunity, he certainly will have something to prove. You know, it's interesting. If Baker winds up with the Panthers, we were saying the same thing about Sam Darnold last year. And for the first month of the season, it played out exactly as I was expecting. I thought you were going to get a fired-up Darnold, have a chip on his shoulder. The Jets bailed on him after just 3 years after he was their top draft pick. Maybe he felt like he was never given a fair shake. He was injured every year. Jets had to fire their coach twice in those 3 years. Never had a ton of weapons for Sam Darnold. So he gets to Carolina. It's a new beginning. He starts his first game against the Jets. Played pretty well. They win the game. Similar for Baker. If Baker winds up in Carolina, his first game will be against Cleveland. Also at home, just like it was for Darnold last year. It's funny how that could work out. Darnold's first game with the Panthers was at home against his former team. Baker, if he winds up with the Panthers, his first game with them could also be at home against his former team. Put that chip on the shoulder. Guys that have something to prove. They want to prove themselves. Both high draft picks, same draft, right? Bottomed out with their original franchise. It'd be like the Panthers are going back to the well and trying it all over again after it didn't work for Sam Darnold last year. But Baker certainly would have something to prove. Darnold had something to prove last year. I don't think he proved it. In fact, I think he proved the Jets to be maybe more correct. But Baker could try to prove the Browns wrong. And we know Baker, right, always he loves that chip on the shoulder. He usually does his best when he's being doubted. So if given the opportunity, whether it's with Carolina or Seattle, you know he will have something to prove, and he will know it. He'll go out there and try to prove himself. What about other quarterbacks? This is a little bit of a nuanced conversation. I don't think you can group everybody together because each quarterback has something different on the line. Some guys are just trying to fight for their job. Others are trying to prove themselves. And then a few are trying to boost their legacy. So let's break this down. And here was, before we do so, here was Keyshawn Johnson. Chris Canty had said previously that Dak Prescott has the most to prove for any quarterback in the NFL this year. We'll get to my list in a moment, but here was Keyshawn Johnson's response, as you heard on their morning show yesterday right here on ESPN Radio. Keyshawn responding to this idea from Chris Canty that Dak Prescott's the quarterback in the league with the most to prove.
I have no idea what Chris Canty is talking about. First of all, the offensive line was banged up. The running game never really got going at the second half of the season the way it was the first half of the season. And all Dak Prescott has done is come back off an injury, try and get this team going in the right direction. They moved on from Amari Cooper, like you mentioned. CeeDee Lamb now is the frontline guy. Cedric Wilson is gone. Michael Gallup is coming back off an injury. Dalton Schultz is there as a tight end. The defense wasn't up to snuff over the last couple of years until all of a sudden they got a better defense. It's just interesting to hear what Chris Canty, the Giant player, has to say.
Keyshawn Johnson arguing against Canty's point. Two things to touch on there. Number one, the Giant player, talk about Chris Canty. I would also say Keyshawn is a former Cowboy, so if you're going to say Canty's biased for being a Giant, wouldn't you then argue that Keyshawn's defense of the Cowboys is him being biased towards his former team? But I would also tell you and remind Keyshawn, Chris Canty was also a former Cowboy. In fact, he was a teammate of Keyshawn Johnson in Dallas and was drafted by the Cowboys, but nonetheless. And also the first point made by Keyshawn there, I think he's kind of arguing against himself. By defending Dak and saying, well, hold on, and the offense wasn't quite as good the second half of the year, and this and that, and they had some injuries. Isn't that the point when you talk about quarterbacks, that the great quarterbacks shouldn't have to have all the assistance around them? They should be able to elevate the team. And if you're going to make excuses that, well, Dak didn't play great because he didn't have enough help, then maybe he isn't that great quarterback. Maybe that proves Chris Canty's point that he still has something to prove this year, being Dak Prescott. Right? He still has to improve his legacy to show he is that guy that can lead a team where you want to go and can do it without a ton of help around them. Because Dak has only been at his best when the supporting cast has been at its best. But when I look at the quarterbacks of the NFL this year, as I said, I think you organize them into different tiers. I can't compare Dak Prescott to, say, Tua. I think they have different things on the line, different types of pressure. Just like you in your own industry, everybody in life, you have different types of pressure. You're in different positions in life. It's the same thing with NFL quarterbacks. So if I were to organize them, the first category is those fighting for their job. And these are the guys that probably have the most to prove, because if they don't prove it, they're going to be without a job. If Dak Prescott has a down year, it's going to change maybe his reputation amongst some, or maybe cement his legacy. But I imagine he'll still be the quarterback of the Cowboys next year, and he's still making a good amount of money. He already got his big contract. For guys like Tua, if he doesn't play well this year, he'll probably be out of a starting job. Dolphins may dump him, have to become a backup somewhere, hope for that second opportunity. So the guys that have to prove themselves just for the sake of their job, I would say, would be Tua, Jalen Hurts, and then a Carson Wentz. I think Jameis Winston. I don't think that job's guaranteed. And then Lamar Jackson in a different sense. I put Lamar in this category because it's his contract year. So he has to prove himself that he's worthy of the big contract he's going to want after this season, whether that's from the Ravens or somebody else. When you're in a contract year, you always have something to prove. So those are the guys fighting for their jobs in one sense or another. Lamar Jackson will have a job. It's just dependent on where and how much money is he going to get and what's that contract going to be like. But Tua, Jalen Hurts, Carson Wentz, Jameis Winston, guys that I think if you don't perform well enough this year, probably won't be starters in 2023. Then you have the category of guys that have to prove themselves. They still have to prove themselves to the doubters, win people over. And in this category, I'd probably put Mac Jones, who we're probably being unfair towards Mac Jones. I mean, how many other rookies get to the playoffs like Mac Jones did last year without any of those playmakers on offense? But he still has plenty of doubters. So Mac Jones in year two, I think, could have something on the line to try to prove himself that he does belong, that he is as good as he was perceived a year ago. I think certainly Ryan Tannehill, whose last season came to a disastrous end. They drafted a quarterback this offseason. Tannehill had to seek help mentally to get through that playoff loss. And a lot of Titans fans, that was like the nail in the coffin, that playoff loss. A lot of people, kind of finally for the first time in Tennessee, started to turn on Ryan Tannehill. I would say Jimmy Garoppolo, assuming that he's even in a role where he's starting this year, he certainly has to prove himself to many. And if the Niners dump him, he's kind of like Baker Mayfield. Go to another team and prove the Niners and all those doubters wrong. Assuming he can stay healthy. I would say Kyler Murray needs to prove himself. Right? He was asking for that big contract this offseason, which I think is crazy. But what has Kyler accomplished so far in his NFL career? Certainly to warrant the contract. And then I would also say Justin Herbert. And I would put Josh Allen in this category as well for different things. The bar is set at a different level for those two. But the Bills are Super Bowl favorites this year. And while Josh Allen has been incredible, you probably think he has nothing to prove. Right? He played great last year in the playoffs against the Chiefs. But the Bills have felt like for the last couple of years they thought they could be the king of the AFC. They're the favorites this year. And so I think Allen has to prove that he can take that next step, that he could take the Bills to a Super Bowl, to an AFC title. And for Justin Herbert, the bar is a little bit lower, but he needs to prove himself that he can be just that leader that gets the team to the playoffs. I know this is only his third year, but when Joe Burrow gets to the Super Bowl, that only ramps up the pressure on somebody like Herbert. That only makes him look worse. Those are the guys that have to prove themselves this year in their performance. Then I get to a couple of guys when it comes to legacy. I would say Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers doesn't have anything to prove in the sense of we know how talented he is. He doesn't have to prove that to you. But boy, would it really help if he got a second ring before retiring. And imagine if he did it without Devontae Adams and with that offensive crew around him. And the way that the Packers have performed in the playoffs, especially at home in recent years, I think Rodgers could use a nice little postseason run. Another quarterback I put in that same category that could really improve their legacy, I would say, is Russell Wilson. I've always been a big Russell Wilson supporter, but just like Rodgers, I tell you, he probably should have more than one Super Bowl, and he had a chance to get another. Through the interception at the goal line. Hasn't been back since. The Seahawks have been a little bit of a disappointment in recent years. Now he's in Denver, and the expectations and the hopes are high for the Broncos. And if you could go to Denver and you win with another organization, obviously then you show it's a lot about the quarterback, especially if the Seahawks really fall into the tank the next couple of years. But if things don't work out in Denver, because remember, Russell Wilson was not great last year. I imagine a big part was because of the finger injury on his throwing hand. That could do it for a quarterback. But if he then goes to Denver and they still underachieve and they struggle, you know people will point the finger to Russell Wilson. And they'll say, like, man, Seattle really didn't win as many the playoff games as they probably should. And now Denver's not winning Russell Wilson either. Fair or otherwise, I think, you know, people would use that as a knock on Russell Wilson. And he is in a tough division, in a tough conference. But I think Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers are two guys that could really boost their legacy. They don't have anything to prove in the sense that we know they're very talented quarterbacks. They're both Hall of Famers. Russell Wilson's a Hall of Famer to me. But boy, would it help if you got that second ring. Or if you're Aaron Rodgers, right, you won without a big-time receiver. Russell Wilson, you won with a second team, showing that you can win wherever you go. And then that leaves, lastly, Dak Prescott. I wouldn't say Dak Prescott is number one when it comes to the quarterback with the most to prove this year. But if you want to talk about established guys, I think you can make a strong case. Dak Prescott, I'd probably put in that middle category of proving himself. You know, Joe Burrow already has more playoff wins than Dak Prescott. That's not a great look. And the Cowboys were incredibly disappointing in their postseason game a year ago. So Dak, sure, does have something to prove to try to prove himself to the doubters that he could be that franchise guy that elevates a team and gets the Cowboys back to a Super Bowl for the first time in 25 years. I don't know if he'd be number one on the list, though. I think even like a Ryan Tannehill has more to prove. I think Justin Herbert I would put ahead of Dak. maybe Kyler Murray. Jimmy Garoppolo, if given an opportunity, seems like he never has a safe job in the league. And then, of course, nobody can beat out those that are actually playing for their jobs. I don't think anybody has more pressure or more to prove this year than a Tua. Even a Jalen Hurts, Carson Wentz, and I could even say a Justin Fields who's trying to prove himself, Zach Wilson trying to prove himself. That's more important or more pressure than the established quarterback like a Dak Prescott. Trent, I put you on the spot. Which quarterback this year, in your mind, do you think has the most to prove in the NFL?
Well, Luke, I kind of pondered a little list here while you were going on your soliloquy, and I've made a couple names. Obviously, you know, the big answer is Tua. You now have all the weapons around you to succeed. Can you do it? Can you get it done in the AFC East? Jalen Hurts as well. You know how you now have A.J. Brown with a young core of wide receivers. I think he has a lot to improve. But I think the player with the most to prove, quarterback, it's got to be Derek Carr in my eyes. I think he's got the roster around him that they can succeed with, not only the offense but the defense as well. Maybe I'm a little salty about Devontae Adams going back with his college teammate, but I will say the Raiders are spending a lot of money. They went all in on Derek Carr, all in on Devontae Adams. They're going to sign Darren Waller to a big deal. The Raiders have to get it done, but it just so happens to be that they're in the AFC West. So I think because they're in the AFC West, going up against those top-tier quarterbacks, Derek Carr's got a lot to prove with this new offense.
I like that, too. I didn't even include Derek Carr. You know, I did think about him. I would have put him in that same category with the Tannehills and Justin Herberts of trying to prove himself. But I was thinking, you know, they just gave him a contract. I figure they're happy. But there is an out in that contract after this year. So if Derek Carr does not play well with those weapons around him and the pressure now on this Raiders team in a tough division, would the Raiders be willing to try to look elsewhere at that quarterback position a year from now?
Yeah, when will Mark Davis get impatient with Derek Carr? At some point, if you're not producing the wins, and I know they've been to the playoffs a couple times. Obviously, they had the coaching change mid-season. But I will say, this is a major proven year for Derek Carr with the weapons that he has around him. He should throw for 5,500 yards with that roster around him, Luke. I mean, if he doesn't, I think it'll be a disappointment.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, he had 4,800 last year. Now you add Devontae Adams, and you add, on paper, theoretically, a better offensive coach leading the way as well in a tough division. And the Raiders were a playoff team last year, so you know, you're going to want to try to get back there this year. Plenty of quarterbacks with something to prove this year. Don't know if Dak Prescott would be number one, though. When we come back, speaking of quarterbacks, where would Spencer Rattler slot into the SEC this year? And what should we expect from him and the Gamecocks? It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, where will Spencer Rattler slot into the SEC this year? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I was thinking about this because somebody reached out to the show on Monday and asked if Spencer Rattler could be considered this year. Would he be considered for the SEC Player of the Year if, say, South Carolina were to win 9 games? And in order to win 9 games, I'd imagine they'd have a pretty good year from Spencer Rattler. So could he put himself in that conversation? And then yesterday, somebody called into the show and asked, you know, how come the Gamecocks have never been consistent enough? They've been consistently inconsistent when it comes to football. And I would say the big thing there is because they've never had elite quarterback play. They're the one school that's never had an all-conference quarterback. That's a problem. And you need a talented quarterback in order to win, especially consistently. You get an Arch Manning. You believe, like, all right, for the next 3 years, we're going to be really good. When you bring in Trevor Lawrence, all right, for at least 3 years while he's here, we're going to be competing for national championships. And for South Carolina, you look at the one time that they were really good in football. It was when Steve Spurrier was there. So has a lot to do with the coach. And credit to Spurrier for bringing in good quarterback play with Connor Shaw and Steven Garcia. And they really haven't been able to duplicate it since until now with Spencer Rattler, which is the reason for excitement for South Carolina. Because on paper, you now have a quarterback better than one you've ever brought into the program. Can he perform well enough that he meets those expectations from maybe a year ago and South Carolina potentially could win 9 games. And Spencer Rattler potentially could be a name, at least in the conversation for SEC Player of the Year, or one of the top quarterbacks in the conference. Here was Paul Feinbaum on Alabama Radio, the morning show with Cole Kublik and Greg McElroy. And this was Feinbaum being asked about the Gamecocks by McElroy. Here's what Paul had to say about South Carolina for this year.
What about South Carolina, Paul? I know it's kind of out of left field, but we've spent, I feel like, a decent amount of time discussing Georgia, a decent amount of time discussing Tennessee, and a decent amount of time discussing the Florida Gators. I don't feel like we've talked much about South Carolina. How dangerous do you think they can be if they can find some consistency at quarterback?
That's the issue. And I'll defer to you, Greg. And I know fans are just going crazy over Spencer Rattler, but I talked to a coach the other day who said, hold on a second. He's got some serious flaws. So, I mean, I don't know. I can't evaluate quarterbacks like you can. But if he can come together and he's got a couple of compliments, then, yeah, they can make a lot of noise. But I do not believe South Carolina is going to have what I would call a breakthrough, like an Arkansas-like season. I think they'll be better. I felt they probably won a game or two last year and got ahead of themselves.
Fine, but I'm talking about South Carolina. I would not expect an Arkansas breakthrough either. Right? Let's be realistic. What I've been saying is just do better than last year. They won 6 games of the regular season last year. This year, win 7. Maybe 8. That'd be a great year, I think, for South Carolina. You're talking about an Arkansas breakthrough. Nah, I don't think South Carolina will be like a top 15 team and maybe get to 10 wins this year. I wouldn't see that either. But be better than last year. And it's interesting when you look at last year, because I could see both sides of the argument. You could say that for South Carolina last year, they had that good season, made it to a bowl, won a bowl game, doing it all while playing 4 different quarterbacks, none of which were all that great. None of which on paper really hold the candle to Spencer Rattler, if Rattler can get back to what we thought he would be. That's the positive. Right, that's the positive spin, that you look at last year's team and say, man, they went 7-6 with 4 different quarterbacks, and look at the quarterbacks they used. Only a handful of programs last year actually started 4 different quarterbacks, and South Carolina had the best record of the few teams. I think 4 programs last year had to use 4 different quarterbacks, and South Carolina was the only one with a winning record, if I remember correctly. The other ones won like 3 games. So it's pretty impressive what South Carolina was able to pull off despite what they were getting in that position. Now, if you get some stability with Spencer Rattler, man, you could daydream about what you could accomplish. But then the negative, to look at the to be pessimistic, you look at last year and say, well, they were, 4-4? And then they beat Florida, who ended up firing their coach. They beat Auburn, who wanted to fire their coach. And then they beat UNC, which was one of the more disappointing teams in the country last year. And in between, they got blown out by Texas A&M. They got blown out by Clemson. And they lost to Missouri, which probably wasn't a great loss on the road. So then you wonder, like, okay, do you take these games with a bit of a grain of salt? Look at their wins last year. Eastern Illinois, East Carolina, Troy, Vanderbilt, those were all gimmies. UNC in the bowl game was good, but I picked South Carolina going into the bowl, even though they were underdogs, because you knew they would be more fired up for that game than UNC. UNC did not want to play in the Duke's Mayo Bowl. And then you beat Florida, who, and they were a train wreck, had to fire their coach, and you beat Auburn, who, well, they're a bit of a train wreck as well, and tried to railroad their coach after just 1 year. That would be the negative view. That you look at last year and say, yeah, I mean, they went 7-6, but you look at some of those wins, not all that impressive. Meanwhile, you lost to Kentucky, you lost to Tennessee, you lost to Missouri, all teams that were kind of on level footing with you in your own division. You got blown out by Georgia, blown out by Clemson, blown out by Texas A&M, the 3 ranked teams you faced. So how hollow is that 7-6 record? That would be the concern. That would be the negative. But when we look at this year, as I said, you got to do better than a year ago. Win 7 games. Win 8. And could Spencer Rattler try to thrust his way into the conversation of top quarterbacks in the SEC? Maybe. If he plays up to the standard that Oklahoma thought they were getting. When I look at the SEC, obviously any type of award when it comes to quarterback or best player, it's on Bryce Young to lose. The guy was the Heisman winner and he's coming back. So it would devalue the award if you said, ah, no, he's not the best quarterback. That's clearly Bryce Young. Anything is, it's all on him to lose this year at Alabama. I'd also put, I'm big on Hooker at Tennessee. I'd put him in that top tier, and then I'd probably put K.J. Jefferson, who was really good last year, now in his second year in that system with the same coach, and I like Arkansas again this year. Those are probably the top 3 quarterbacks to me. Then you get to maybe the question marks. Will Levis, I'd probably put in the question mark. People are really talking up Will Levis, saying maybe he could be a top 10 pick. I still think he's got to show me something this year. Show me more than a year ago. Take that step forward. And it is Kentucky football, so you know there's always a ceiling to their success. I'd say Anthony Richardson, big question mark. There's high expectations, high hopes. I think he still has to prove that. And I would say Jackson Dart could be a question at Ole Miss. You know, a high-end recruit transfers into Ole Miss. We just saw what Lane Kiffin was able to do with Matt Corral, and Lane certainly knows offense. He is one of the better play callers in the country. Could it be a plug-and-play situation? You plug in Jackson Dart and kind of pick up where you left off a year ago. Could Jackson Dart be somebody that no one's really focusing on right now that becomes one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC? And then I'd probably put Spencer Rattler in this category as well, where if you just go off of the expectations for Rattler coming out of high school or when he was at Oklahoma, if he could get back to that point, yeah, he could be a high-end SEC quarterback. The concern would be, well, the SEC is a little bit tougher than Oklahoma. You're not going to have Lincoln Riley, and you're not going to have the weapons around you that you had at Oklahoma. You're going to face some better defenses than you did at Oklahoma. And if you still got benched at Oklahoma, what's going to happen in the SEC? But I do think Spencer Rattler will have a good year, and I think I'd probably put him, his ceiling would probably be that second tier. Bryce Young, KJ Jefferson, Hendon Hooker would be my top tier quarterbacks in the SEC for this year. And then right now, that second tier, I would say Richardson, Levis, Jackson Dart, Spencer Rattler. With all four of those guys, I'd give the opportunity, based off of their play, to bump up to the top tier. If Richardson's as good as advertised, if Will Levis is this first-round pick, if Jackson Dart fills in those shoes of Matt Corral, if Spencer Rattler meets the expectations, they could play well enough to potentially be a top quarterback amongst the top quarterbacks in the SEC this year. And if Spencer Rattler could be an all-conference quarterback for the South Carolina Gamecocks, first time they've ever done that, they'll accomplish some good things this year as well. We'll wrap up Hour 1 next. It's more Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We were talking last segment about SEC quarterbacks and where Spencer Rattler could slot in. You know, he has a chance to do some things for South Carolina that has never really been done at that position in the SEC. Now, Trent, I know that previously you guys had ranked quarterbacks in the SEC East.
Right, correct.
On air. And you had Spencer Rattler only behind, now I'm drawing a blank.
Hendon Hooker.
Hendon Hooker, right.
Yeah, so I had Hendon Hooker my number one quarterback, I think, in the SEC East. I think that's relatively obvious. He's got I feel like he's the most pro-ready guy as of right now. And based off of talent and what I saw from Oklahoma, I did have Spencer Rattler slot in that second spot in the SEC East. I'm relatively high on the guy. From everything we're hearing, the videos I'm seeing, it seems like he can really command this South Carolina offense a little bit better than Jason Brown or Zeb Nolan. No disrespect to those gentlemen.
I would certainly hope so. Which, again, goes back to the reason why you could be an optimistic Gamecock fan. You went 7-6 last year with those guys at the quarterback. Four different quarterbacks that probably three of them shouldn't have even started for you in the SEC. But then if you're a negative Gamecock fan, you say, yeah, they went 7-6 last year, but you know who did they beat? Did they beat a good team? We could argue about Florida, Auburn, even UNC. None of those are great wins in hindsight. But when you add Spencer Rattler to the mix and what he could bring to the table, something that potentially you haven't had before, there's certainly reason to be excited, especially in year two of Shane Beamer after year one looked as good as it did. We'll shift gears, talk some golf when we come back with Jeremy Schilling. I'm sure there's plenty to get to. Hour two next.